because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's weekly look at the Capitol and politics. How far is the election? 39 days, J.R.?
Oh, something like that.
Something like that. Let's open with Mr. Trump. 2 days yes. after his debate, he comes to Waukesha County. Now, remember, last time he was in West Bend, also suburban, largely white Milwaukee suburbs.
Yes.
So he comes back to Waukesha, which I think the same place where Governor Walker announces his presidency, but we have...
All about the base.
All about the base. I want us to listen to a pretty extensive... it's only like 3 minutes. You have an intro from former U.S. Senator Bob Casten. Now, let's rewind on that. He was Senator 1981 through 93. And then lost to Russ Feingold. And then you have Sheriff Clark, which is pretty amazing statement. Then you have Captain Cheerleader Tommy Thompson is all in for Mr. Trump and then Mr. Trump. Let's play about 3 minutes worth of the Waukesha rally.
This country is uniting behind Donald Trump. This state, we might be one or two behind, we might be one or two ahead. This state is uniting behind Donald Trump. Waukesha County is uniting behind Donald Trump. And we're going to put this together the way we've had in the past with recalls for Scott, with the work that we've done, with all the work over the years. The candidate of peace is Donald Trump. The candidate of danger is Hillary Clinton.
There are people who were defined for a moment in our great American history. George Washington was made for the American Revolution. Abraham Lincoln was made for the Civil War. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was made for the Civil Rights Movement. Ronald Reagan was made to win the Cold War. And I believe that Donald J. Trump was made for this moment of turmoil here in the United States. And together, Donald Trump and we the people are going to make America great again.
If we do our job, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have a new direction in this country. A new Republican president, a new movement, something that is patriotic and believes in God, believes in the flag, and believes in this great country. It's time to get on the train. The Trump train is moving. We need you on the Trump train.
I was here 3 months ago, and I was speaking, and I get a call from Tommy. He's a great guy. He really is an amazing guy. A lot of energy. A lot of energy. But Tommy was here, and I get a call, Don, could I come over and see you? And I was about 15 points down, right? 15. So he calls me, about three. And he said, can I see you? He comes in, he goes, Don, I really like you, get the hell out of here. I said, why? He said, you're not going to win this state. I said, but I think I can. We have unbelievable, no, he said it. He said, but if things change, I'll call you. But I'm telling you, Don, go to Pennsylvania. Go to Ohio. I understand. He said, go to Florida, where we're leading and leading. Go there. Spend your time. Wisconsin's going to be tough. Go there. But if anything changes, I'll call you. Right? So now what happens? Very interesting. He's a great guy. So I get a call about 2 weeks ago. Don, time to come back. 2 points. 2 points. He said... time to come back. He saw one at two. He saw one at three. And I'm back. And we're going to win Wisconsin.
J.R., I find that fascinating. So I haven't really given you a chance to weigh in yet. But Bob Casten, you know, Senator 81 through 93. I looked it up. He's 74 years old. And he said, Mr. Trump is a candidate of peace. Hillary is a candidate of danger. Any P.S. on why Bob Casten?
No, it's just that you're seeing this interesting dynamic in the Republican Party right now of there are still holdouts who are not getting on the Trump train, unlike what Tommy urged them to do, especially in southeastern Wisconsin. But you are seeing a lot of folks who are because they're looking at this as a choice between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. With that choice, they're saying he's better than she is. The Supreme Court's at stake. Now, there's still a segment saying, I can't take either. I'm going to go with Gary Johnson. But it's interesting to watch how the the party and people around for a long time navigate this territory where they're seeing after he went back to the White House. But let's be honest. I mean, Reince Priebus, the RNC chairman, said, if we don't win the White House in 2016, we're kind of cooked as a party. It's right there. They feel like they're close. They need to win the White House. So what do? I mean, realizing this is a key thing for your party. You can hold the House for generations. The Dems did it. But they didn't have the White House for much of that period, too, and couldn't get things done. I mean, they feel a need to have the White House right now.
Now, let's talk about the dynamics of Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. You know, the white cowboy hat. And he said that we had Washington for the birth of a nation. We had Lincoln for the Civil War. We had Martin Luther King for the Civil Rights Movement. We had Ronald Reagan for the Cold War. And we have Donald Trump for such a time as this. Mr. Clark has run as a Democrat. So he continues to what? Audition for a job in the Trump administration?
That's an excellent question because Mr. Clark has been very vocal about Donald Trump. He has survived recent attempts to go after him in Democratic primaries because in Milwaukee County, oftentimes, if you win the primary as a Democrat, you're going to win the office. They've gone after him, haven't been able to pull it off. So what's his future going to be? Does he want to run for something else, run statewide? He's got national ambitions. He's a regular fixture in Fox News. He is all in on Donald Trump. How Trump goes, so will possibly David Clark's future politics.
And then let's talk about the introduction of Trump by former Governor Tommy Thompson. He's all in. He's the fist pounding. He's arms everywhere. Mr. Thompson is also 74 now. So, but correct me if I'm wrong. Tommy wasn't initially a Trumpkin, to quote Mr. Sykes.
He supported Kasich in the primary.
Yes.
I believe he was for others before that. I probably like Governor Walker. So he kind of one of those guys who moved around as people came in and out. He was not our Trump, but like I've said, others are seeing that this is a choice between two people, and who do you get behind? And for a lot of Republicans, it's Donald Trump. You feel like you kind of have to. What was interesting, and other point to me, is the Tommy Thompson that we knew was a cheerleader, who was where the Eagles soar and the Harleys roar and the Packers score. That was his line. He was always so upbeat and positive. That's not the Tommy Thompson we're used to seeing. And kind of the question I've had for some people this week is why? What's the end game for Tommy Thompson, for his legacy, for his place in politics by embracing Donald Trump this way? That's kind of a little subtext for all us who are junkies, if you will.
Yeah, and then finally, Mr. Trump's speech, I listened to it all. He repeated some of the major themes. And then he said, I'm back in Wisconsin because Tommy told me, don't come here. Mm-hmm. You're going to lose focus on these other states, major states that are still in play. Then Tommy called and said, get back here. So I'm back in Wisconsin because Tommy asked me, and we're going to win Wisconsin. Any thoughts? Is that the real reason that Mr. Trump did come back?
Well, a couple of things. In talking to Republicans this week, they feel good about where Trump is in western Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin. You know, I hear bits and pieces about polling in, like, competitive legislative seats. And I'm hearing things about Trump doing well in places where you wouldn't expect him to. His problems in southeastern Wisconsin, one of them. And that is where the wild counties, talk about Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington counties. Those are usually deep red, turn out in big numbers, but they lack enthusiasm for Trump right now. He's in Waukesha to try and get those people on board and build them up. If he can get normal numbers out of southeastern Wisconsin for Republican, if he can do that, and do well as he's doing in northern and western Wisconsin, there's a chance. Now, what's interesting, though, is he had this period where Hillary Clinton's numbers went down because she had this horrible spell with between the medical episode, between the basket of deplorables, where it's like, oh, she's made this horrible stumble, and you saw his numbers tick up.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing the aftermath of the debate from Monday, where most people nationally feel like Donald Trump won the first 15 to 30 minutes, depending on what kind of mark you want to use, where they kind of got to a draw. But for originally, he was really on talking about her being around for 30 years, not fixing things, talking about trade. He was on great territory, discipline.
Yep.
But when she baited him with the attacks, he kind of lost
the Miss Universe from the 1990s.
And now all we're seeing is like 3 days of coverage of the Miss Universe, because he's not just like, he's not trying to back away from it. He's doubling and tripling down, including this Twitter storm last night about her, or early this morning about her. It's taking attention away from Hillary Clinton. If you are Donald Trump right now, you want to talk about Benghazi, emails, 30 years, trade deal. You don't want to talk about anything. He's talking about himself. He's defending his record as a person, and that's not helping him win this race.
Let's stay in the weeds on this for one more moment. After your luncheon yesterday with Mr. Barkin and Mr. Voss, Speaker Voss told reporters that actually having Trump at the top of a ticket isn't hurting his assembly candidates. It's helping. I don't understand that.
Well, it's interesting because the argument I've heard from Republicans for a while is that voters see Trump as not a Republican, but a party of himself, essentially, the party of Trump. So they're not punishing, if you will, down ballot, Republicans, because they don't see him connected.
That's it. Okay.
But what I'm wondering is, as Republicans say, well, he's leading in this Senate district or this Assembly. Well, if he's not hurting him down ballot, how is he helping him down ballot? Is he bringing out voters who wouldn't vote normally? Maybe. But you can't argue at the same time that Trump is not hurting you by saying he's going to be a big boom for your candidates, you know, okay. Same breath.
That's a good point. Thanks for helping me understand that. Let's also note that the GOP candidate for vice president, Mr. Pence, was in the state. Mm-hmm. I think he was working on more debate prep with Governor Walker.
Republicans hope more prep than Donald Trump did for the debate.
Yes. And today, Chelsea Clinton is in Green Bay.
Which, you know, we were quiet for about a month, but now all of a sudden we're seeing activity pick up. And the question is, do we become a true swing state again? Mm-hmm. We've been through elections where we were like the epicenter of the election. That hasn't been an experience so far. It is almost eerie in some ways to turn on TV and not see presidential campaign ads. Will Trump run ads in Wisconsin? His campaign over the last weekend said that we were one of, I think, 13 states he'll air ads in.
Yeah.
We'll see if that actually happens. Right. He visited. That's a good sign for Republicans. But will he really invest? And now we're seeing Clinton kind of react a little bit. Will they both invest in the final 6 weeks?
Yep. Okay, new topic. Yesterday I had a chance to do a candidate interview with Speaker Voss. I, of course, opened with the subject of transportation. He continued to say, you know, the governor recommended no fee increases, delaying some projects. But here's what he told me on the assembly plan, their strategy on coming up with their own plan transportation funding. Let's listen to Speaker Voss yesterday.
I look at us as a co-equal branch of government. While, once again, I'm an ally of the governor, I think it's my job to disagree when I think he's wrong, and it's my job to advocate for his position when I think he's right. Just because he says something, I'm not going to salute and say that's my position. I think we have reasonable positions on both sides, and I'd rather have that robust discussion, seeing where the public actually is, as opposed to saying, well, the governor made a decision, and it's my job to carry it out. We have a sincere concern about long-term debt. We know that under the governor's transportation proposal, up to 25% of revenues is just going to pay for existing debt for past projects. I always prefer to pay as I go. I think that's a smarter strategy. We know that debt is not something that's going to get cheaper as we go forward. I think we are at a historically low term in interest rates. So relying on bonding now, you could argue, is a good idea. But relying on it in the future makes absolutely no sense. So we've got to find out, how are we going to pay for roads? Which, if we look at the history, I think going back to 2007 or 2006, total transportation revenues are up about 2%. And the total cost of construction is literally 40%. So something is out of balance where our revenues are basically stable, not even keeping up with inflation, and costs are going up with the need for more trained workers, having a harder time finding people to want to work outside and do these difficult jobs. Costs are going up as our wages. That's a good thing for our economy, but it's not a good thing for our transportation budget. Based on what the Towns Association have said, that even with Governor Walker's increased funding, the average town will get 53 feet of road. We've got to figure out, how do we pay as we go, and hopefully we can find a solution that we all buy into way before we have to separate the budget.
JR, I'm interested in a couple things that Voss said, your reaction to them. Just because the governor says something, I'm not going to salute, point one. Mm-hmm. Then point two, Mr. Voss said, even though the governor is proud of the increased DOT money for local roads, it's 53 feet of road for the average town. Your response, your thoughts on both those?
A couple of things have been pointed out to me is that while Robin is right, that he doesn't salute the governor, and he's a co-equal branch, there are actually three legs of the stool, right? There's the governor, there's the assembly, and there's the Senate.
Yeah.
And what's more is that Robin has an issue, from when I'm talking to people, that where's his caucus going to be?
Is he out over his skis in terms
of... Well, he does have leadership, you know, so the leadership team, John Nygren, JFC co-chair, Jim Steinecke, majority leader, Dan Canodal, assistant majority leader. I mean, they're behind Robin. They've signed on letters together. But where's the caucus? Where are guys like Bob Gannon, for example, from Slinger, Wisconsin? He's very conservative.
Who doesn't
member.
Have an opponent.
No. Where are those guys? Does he have 50 votes to try and raise taxes or fees in this budget? And, oh, by the way, Scott Fitzgerald has said, we're not going to go against the governor. We're going to work with his parameters. My caucus is split. You don't see consensus building where could they find a way to not only push through a tax increase in the budget, but two, override a veto from the governor, because he has said, I will veto any budget that has a tax increase out and offset somewhere else.
Right.
Now, there have been all kinds of ideas floated, like take the budget and break it out and do a transportation, do it all by itself. Well, that happened almost 20 years ago,
yep.
Somewhere around there.
Yep.
I don't think talk Republicans, they want to try that again.
Senator Fitzgerald says, well, that's a double lift. Not only do you have to have a lift to pass the main budget, but a second lift to pass the transportation budget.
So where do they find the support? And that's what I can't get from people is they don't see the path for Robin right now to get them through without the Senate on board. Now, if they were together, if Fitz and Robin were saying, we are united in doing this, that'd be one thing. But without that, it's an issue. And oh, by the way, governor's been saying, hey, you guys want to raise taxes? Give us a plan and go out and run on it. We want to see you run on a gas tax hike this fall.
Yes, and also in the same interview, candidate interview yesterday with Speaker Voss, he telegraphed it this way. We're going to wait till the election November 8th. Then Keith Ripp, assuming he's reelected chairman of transportation, is then going to go out and hold hearings on the WSDOT budget and focusing on the actual delays and the effect if the WSDOT budget became law. So he wants to go out and stir it a little bit before the governor presents his budget in February. Interesting. Okay, JR, you came up with some interesting campaign finance numbers showing that incumbents have pretty good leads over their challengers.
Cash on hand, for sure.
Yes, so let's walk through those one by one. Talk about Harsdorff and Odeen.
Right. So
go ahead.
In the 10th, interesting, we talked about that race, very different, difficult media market because it's the Twin Cities. This was that bubble in western Wisconsin. Harsdorff outraised Diane Odeen, who's a lawyer, member of the River Falls City Council, about $45,000 to about $28,000. Cash on hand, though, was like $131,000 to $75,000.
Yep.
Unless Odeen gets a big infusion of cash from outside groups, it's hard to see how she breaks through. And the groups I talked to are saying, we're not going to invest there because it's just so expensive. And oh, by the way, the Harsdorff name is golden in that district.
Yep.
In the 12th, Tom Tiffany, this guy is a rock star when it comes to raising money. I mean, like, I had not seen this kind of money by a member in a long time in one cycle, but he's got $281,000 cash on hand. Now, his opponent, Brian Van Stippen, $53,000.
Right.
What's interesting is the American Federation for Children, their independent expenditure arm went in about, I think, 2-3 weeks ago and dropped $338,000.
That's the pro-choice group.
Pro-school choice group. On Van Stippen, as a carpetbagger who's not from around here,
right.
I mean, just took the paint off him a little bit. What I'm seeing, though, is this new group has gone in and spent, I think, about $100,000 or so going after Tiffany. People can't figure out why. He's got great money. The numbers are good for Republicans in that district. What is going on? It's kind of like the head scratcher of the advertising right now. So there's that. The 14th, which is becoming a much hotter race all
you
of a sudden.
You call Tom Tiffany a campaign finance rock star. I'm still in awe of that. But go ahead, the 14th.
Olson. That used to be congressional money, if you think back in the day.
Thank you. That's right.
The 14th, Luther Olson. This race is all of a sudden like really popped because, you know, Luther, he got outraised by his opponent, which, you know, the caveat is Brian Smith got money from the Senate Democratic Campaign Committee. Now, this is, they call it in-kind contributions. So I pay for your staff. It counts as a contribution, but you're not really getting the money. Mm-hmm. That said, Luther didn't really set anybody the world on fire this fundraising this past period. He does have a cash on hand advantage of 2-1, but if anyone wants to go in there and spend money, they can outspend these guys hand over fist. We are now seeing a group going after Luther over the King home. He had this headline this week about how he skipped a tour of King to go to a
pastry judging, a
baking contest.
Yes.
He says keeping his word looks bad in retrospect. And there's the pay-to-play stuff, which he's rejected, but is out there from the John Doe documents we saw.
Right.
There's an opportunity now in that race to really light it up. And by the way, these guys, the money that they have is not enough to push off an outside group. Where at Tom Tiffany, even the six-figure buy, he can double it if he wants to in his district. Now, what I'm wondering is, what's the oppo on Brian Smith? When I talk to Republicans, they say, okay, they're going after, you know, Luther. We have ours. So that's coming next, from what I can tell.
Okay.
The 18th is interesting. This is
absolutely fascinating.
This is
the only open Senate seat.
Number one race to watch.
Yep.
Mark Harris has done an excellent job, Democrat, county executive, excellent job building a fundraising operation, had $132,000 in the bank. Dan Fine had $20,000. Normally you'd go, ooh, that's a problem. The thing is, these guys will be outspent tenfold and then some by outside groups. This is a pittance compared to what's going to be spent. And Dan Fine, despite having only 20 grand in the bank end of August, was still able to go up on TV this week, or last week. And I'm talking to folks is because the new campaign finance laws say that the caucuses and the parties can transfer unlimited amounts of money to candidates. So whereas a Dan Fine years ago, 20 grand's not enough to be on TV, the committee elect Republican Senate can say, okay, well, here's your check for X or transfer. You go do your TV buy, or they can do it for them and in-kind it, and you're taken care of.
Yep.
That's the race to watch of all
absolutely.
These. The 24th, again, normal year when you see Julie Lassa with $185,000 in the bank and her opponent with $44,000, you go, not much of a race in a Dem-leaning seat. What's interesting, though, is the RSLC is now doing an ad there. It says a six-figure buy, which almost everything here now is a six-figure buy. What's it really mean? That said, they're basically prodding Lassa's seat. Is there something there? Republicans tell me they feel good about that district because of Trump, that he's doing well in that seat. Dems will tell you that Julie Lassa is rock solid with the district on her own personal numbers. Pat Teston's up on the air, running his TV ad. That's one where I'm kind of getting the feeling that Dems should win, but they're making a play to see, well, one, will Lassa get scared? If she gets scared, will she squeak to the Senate Dems to say, you got to help me out? If they come help her out, will it pull money away from going after Luther or going after the 18th? So maybe an investment there to kind of draw resources. That got to watch that one a little bit.
And then there's the grudge match in the 32nd.
Again, if I usually see Jennifer Schilling with that kind of a raise, you go, okay, appreciate it. But Kapanke, $100,000 in the bank, that's pretty darn good for a challenger, but he's also a former lawmaker. Yeah. Republicans will tell you up and down that race is closer than you think it is. And Dems will go, yeah, but the numbers still stink for Republicans. So unless an outside group invests, he's on his own, and that's not the best thing for somebody. It may end up being a closer race than we think, but the numbers are so bad for Republicans in that seat, it's hard to see how he overcomes that right now.
Great numbers, very valuable overview. Thanks, JR. Oh, moving along here, mm-hmm. Let's go to our right-to-work law, where a federal judge ruled this week that because of a precedent set in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, he had to avoid the challenge to our new right-to-work law. But that's only half the picture, because there's still a challenge pending in Dane County?
Actually, it's in the Third District Court of
Appeals
right now.
It's moved up to Third District Court of Appeals.
But outside of Dane County Court, the law has been upheld by every court to look at it. So the going feeling is that once this works its way through, it'll be upheld. Indiana's was. Ours will be back in place. Or working in, the chance will go away, and away we go.
Yep, okay. But the last major ruling was from District Judge Stad Miller on it. The arguments, the noise, the sound, the ads keep changing in Johnson versus Feingold. I just want to highlight there's a new group, the New Independent Reform Wisconsin Fund. Mm-hmm. Now, that this week accused Feingold of voting 8 times to allow partial birth abortions. That's a new player in this, isn't it, JR?
It is. What's interesting is, you know, we've been talking for a few weeks that Johnson's been building up his positives with these nice ads about the Joseph Project in Milwaukee, which Alan is Madison as well, about his helping a Green Bay couple complete an adoption child from the Democratic Republic of Congo, his whiteboard ad that reflects the one from 2010 that people love so much. He's building himself up. Somebody has to take Feingold down. This is the first thing we've seen to try and bring Feingold's numbers down. Now, when I talked to people this week, they were kind of surprised at the line of attack. You know, abortion is a very touchy subject in politics, and often you see it done in mail, where it's under the radar, so you're targeting an audience where you know they're receptive to the message. This one is you know, a little bit graphic in describing what happens in this procedure, and they're really kind of pushing that. And what I've been told is that, look, Feingold's been hit with stuff about the Toma VA, about national security, Johnson's hitting you on the ethics stuff. This is something that actually moves people. Now, it's only $365,000, which sounds like a lot, but in a campaign like this, it's not a huge amount of money. I've been told to expect more. The question kind of becomes, will other outside groups come in and really kind of go after this race? Because what's interesting is, like, the main Senate Republican super PAC for their races announced this morning through the Washington Post investments, I think, 6 races. We're not one of them. You know, we're not seeing that vibe of we're really in play. The Johnsonville are adamant that there's a path to victory, that people are falling asleep on this race, and that Feingold's going to have the paint taken off of them in the next month, and they go negative on them. But I talk to people, are like, the vibe isn't there. And Republicans, some of them are like, it is tightening here locally, but the D.C. crowd is just skeptical of what's going on. They see the normal performance in Wisconsin presidential year. They see Feingold's numbers and go, it's not there. What I'll be really interested to see is, you know, if this race is being close on Election Day, Republicans go, why should invest it there? You know, it'd be interesting to watch. I still feel like Feingold is has the edge and is favored, but will that race tighten?
But I was also surprised in this new radio ad that Mr. Feingold was running, because he did not always agree with President Obama. Mm-hmm. But suddenly, now that the president's approval rating is 58%, he's using President Obama in a radio ad to help him. Mr. Feingold is saying the President Obama's voice. Senator Feingold didn't always agree with me, but agrees with the people of his state. I just find that kind of intriguing.
Interesting that ad seems geared toward African Americans in Milwaukee. There's been some chatter about Hillary Clinton not really invigorating certain segments of the Obama coalition, if you will. Yeah. That seems like a play to try and jazz up that community in Milwaukee and say, hey, we need you guys on Election Day. Come on out and vote. So that may be part of it. Now, the Johnson people also are pretty happy that Joseph Foundation ad, that it's not about winning African Americans for Johnson, it's about not losing as badly as Republicans usually do. Much like for you know, Feingold, a place like Waukesha County, you're not going to win Waukesha County. Just don't lose as badly as, you know, Democrats usually do. That can be the margin sometimes, these races.
Yeah, that's a good comment. Before we go to the stock, Milwaukee Police Chief Flynn talked to the press club yesterday, and it was really a thoughtful. It was 6 weeks after the violence and the protests. So I want to play a short clip. It's probably only 2 minutes long, where he talks about, well, just listen.
We would ask people accord our officers today the same presumptions they offer our soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's amazing to me that all our soldiers are heroes as long as they wear olive drab, but when they put on blue, they're suspects. We've bombed hospitals by accident. We've dropped mortar rounds on our friends. We've shot unarmed villagers. It's the fog of war. And some of our soldiers have gone to jail because they were doing a bad thing. And the vast majority of them have been seen to be making an error. And a subset of them have had their careers end because it was really bad judgment, even though there was no ill intent. Well, those same, you know, thoughts about what we're doing with our own officers, they should at least be equal. You can't take police activity and deconstruct it separate and apart from the massive problems of central city violence. It is hypocritical to talk about one and not talk about the other. And we're all sincere in policing when we say to the Black Lives Matter movement, can you imagine the impact if I could mobilize consistently a couple of thousand people on the street to say, do something about this friggin' holocaust of violence in my community? I want the system to respond. I want the state to respond. I want the federal government involved. The easy way out, demonize the police, back us up, watch the violence increase, and then accuse us of apathy. It's the height of political hypocrisy to put all of this on that mayor or the other, and by extension, their ratepayers, while everybody else says, not my problem. But you know damn well if there's a tornado in I don't know where county, you know, Wisconsin, the money we've poured into the state from our taxes is going to go out there and nobody's going to blink an eyelash.
J.R., I don't know that you and I have a whole lot to add to that, but I just want to highlight what he said. When our Americans are in Iraq and Afghanistan, they're heroes. But come home, police officers, you put them in blue uniforms, they're suspects. The fog of war and the holocaust of violence in Milwaukee. Any PSs before we move on? No. Okay. Stock report.
So rising. So we kind of talked about the 18th Senate District money. I mean, where people air ads in Senate races can be like a chess game. They get the map out. I'm going to go here, and then I got to react to this, and I'm going to go here and react to this. This one is the king piece, if you will. I mean, that I think the Great Wisconsin Committee, last time I checked, they had roughly $900,000. Now, I remember days, and you do too, when $9,000 paid for an entire campaign. Now it's one media buy from one group. We're seeing other groups go in. The conservatives tell me that they're prepared to match them dollar for dollar and go up there, and it's going to be all about. And what's interesting is part of this is you look at the map and go, okay, Tiffany on the 12th seems pretty much safe. You know, you never assume anything, but it looks pretty good. Olson, it's Republican-leaning seat. Can you really make headway there and pick him off? This one is the best shot Dems have to win a seat. They got to protect Julie and, you know, watch for Jennifer Schilling. But this is the one they need to win because they need to make progress the next two cycles to get back to the majority because, like we talked several times, come 2021, if you're a Democrat, you have to have either the governor's office, the state Senate, or the assembly to have a seat at the table for redistricting. If you don't, it could be a decade, another decade in the wilderness.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, mixed.
So college students, Governor Walker this week announces a private sector answer about refinancing student loan debt, right?
Yep.
For weeks, if not months, he's been saying, it doesn't matter what rate you pay, it's how much you owe when you leave. That's why I'm doing the tuition freeze and pushing that. This seems to be an acknowledgement, if you will, that they needed something more. Another answer to respond to Democrats keep pushing for a state authority to refinance the loan debt. It's interesting that if you look, Women's Wisconsin Now, which has made this like its cause, if you will, to go after student loan debt, has released polling in a couple key Senate races saying like 80%+ of people want to allow you to refinance student loan debt like a mortgage. It's a potent issue, and this is an effort by the governor to try and find a private sector answer to push back. Now, Democrats say it's not enough because, you know, the head of the credit union said, yeah, if you have bad credit, if you're not making payments on your, you're not going to get refinance, you know. So what do you do for those folks? And that's Democrats inadequate. Now, the other thing is we saw this week that there's a confluence of Obamacare and state law which says that you can't provide college students health care, right?
Yes.
Obamacare says if they work 30 hours more a week, you have to provide health care.
Right.
There's a new cap that says 25 hours starting January 1st.
If you are, UW-Madison is imposing a 25-hour cap because of this Obamacare provision. Excuse me.
Now, here's the thing. You're talking, according to UW-Madison, like 30 kids out of like, I can't remember how many thousand who work. System-wide, it's like 150 or less, somewhere around there. But still, it's an interesting political twist that you have the Johnson campaign saying, oh, Feingold, this is part, you know, you're talking about college affordability and helping college kids. What about this? You supported Obamacare. They're trying to bring Obamacare back into the conversation of that Senate race and try to make it an issue for Feingold.
That's very interesting. And then failing?
Tom Nelson. So,
Democrat in the 8th district.
A few months ago, we were talking about how Donald Trump looked like a disaster, possibly, that this was a great pickup opportunity for Democrats to go up there in a Republican-leaning seat, even in presidential years. This week, the DCCC pulls back 1 week of its ad buy to help Nelson. Now, they did the usual, you know, song and dance about how we reevaluate competitive seats in this environment. So, but it's obviously a sign they're seeing what we're seeing, that Mike Gallagher has a lead. He looks in a strong position. Trump is doing fairly well in the Green Bay market. You add that up, and it's not the best place to invest money right now, and Nelson is struggling with that. He also this week had to go for the first time say, I did not take a raise back in 2009 and was a member of the legislature. What I did was, yes, it came in, but I donated to charity. If you remember, we round for that. We were in the middle of a $5.7 billion deficit, something like that.
Yeah, you had Governor Doyle and you had Dems in control of both houses.
Lawmakers had approved a raise in 2007, I think it was, which by a committee, so everybody had to vote on it, but it kicks automatically. You cannot decrease or increase your pay, compensation as a lawmaker in your term. So some people said, I'm not going to take it, give it right back to the state. Those people are still liable for taxes on that extra income. Some people said, I'm going to donate to charity. Well, Nelson didn't say anything at the time, but now he's saying, okay, here are the documents that show you I donated this money, because it's become a potent issue because Gallagher's hitting him with him on TV, and the NRCC has come up this week and said, this is a guy who took a pay raise in the middle of a financial crisis in Wisconsin while your friends are losing their jobs. It's a potent issue.
But I want to come back to what you just said. At the time, Mr. Nelson, Tom Nelson, didn't tell us that's what he's doing.
Well, first time he's disclosed that.
That's a good choice for falling. Before we end, we have not heard from the U.S. Supreme Court or whether they're going to accept or not accept the petition from our local DAs to reopen the John Doe 2, right?
They met in conference this week. They still could announce something early next week to watch, so still to be determined.
And then one final thought. The Democrats yesterday asked the Dane County DA, Ishmael Ozan, to open an investigation of the Wisconsin Club for Growth. Probably not going to happen, right?
Well, Ozan acknowledged getting the complaint, didn't tell me if he was going to do anything with it. Governor Walker's campaign said this is pointless. What's interesting is a lot of what they talked about at this news conference on Thursday was stuff we've heard before.
Yes.
But they're saying there's a new twist, that there's a ban on corporate contributions and that there's a possible violation there. But the Supreme Court shut down this investigation. They need the U.S. Supreme Court to open it back up. I don't know this will go anywhere, but you know, it's another trying to ding Scott Walker about these documents released from The Guardian.
But the Dane and the Milwaukee County DAs, their first choice is that they get a favorable ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes.
Before opening John Doe, what amounts to John Doe 3.
And then what do you do? Because laws, I mean, that's the whole other can of worms to get into.
Yeah, that's great. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 30.